So a new series talking about mission, something that many of us know something about, knowing that it has to do with places far from home. And yet to be reminded that as I was reading through the book of Jonah this week, he was commanded at one point to go to the Ninevites, and he was told to arise and go. And Jesus, as he ascended into heaven, challenged his disciples to go and take the gospel through the Great Commission to all the outer reaches of the world, to Judea, Samaria, and the outer reaches, and to do what? To make disciples and to baptize those in the name of Jesus. And so as we understand what that looks like here in 2021, we're going to have a conversation this morning with a good friend of mine, Steve Storkel. Steve served on staff at Berean Baptist here in Mansfield for a decade and a half. He and I were allies on many fronts in my youth ministry days. I was able to find Steve at his home in Orlando, Florida. He moved there about 2 years ago to take over the responsibilities of the Timothy Initiative, and he's going to unpack what that's all about. He's working for a Baptist denomination in partnership with churches in Haiti, and he's responsible for the Caribbean Basin, basically Haiti, Cuba, and the Dominican Republic. And so let's talk with Steve now. Steve Storkel and I have known each other for, what, probably 20 years, and we've shared ministry efforts together in our region, and Steve's always had a heart for Haiti, and now you're currently, your title is at Converge?
Director of Missions for the Caribbean.
The Caribbean, which includes Haiti.
Haiti, Dominican, and Cuba. Those are my main focuses.
Right, so you're like right in the middle of all the upheaval. This is amazing.
Yeah. Cuba is the biggest concern upon my heart right now, more than Haiti, because they shut down all the media.
Yeah, that's a concern, I think, for all of us, that the power the government has. And I heard this morning they had turned off the internet. So just thinking about, you know, because if you'll remember, just a footnote, when Tiananmen Square happened many years ago in China, it was the fax machines, because that was sort of the means of communication that allowed those that wanted to push against the Chinese government. And so now you have the internet with Twitter and all the other different platforms. And if they're not available to people to communicate, although I'm going to guess cell phones, but even that probably they can shut down the towers.
Yeah. At the top powerful enough to go internationally.
Yeah. I guess I just thought as I was thinking about just where we find ourselves as the church, and here we are, normally this is the mission time, right? A lot of churches step up and we're just coming out of the pandemic. And so when was the last time you were actually physically in Haiti?
I was there in June.
June. Okay. And how have they weathered sort of the pandemic themselves? I mean,
the pandemic has hit key individuals. It has not hit the masses. You know, I know of three pastors that are no longer with us. They're in the presence of the Lord who died of COVID. But the masses have not been affected. Just key individuals. No one wears a mask. And if they do wear a mask, no one wears a mask properly. It's a chin mask.
Right.
And so it's just that COVID is just adds to their misery and their suffering a little bit more. It's just hit more prominent people. More prominent people would not normally get sick, but COVID hit them. Right. And, you know, there was just reported a spike 3 weeks ago in Haiti of COVID. And that was only because some journalists and some leaders in government died of COVID.
Okay.
It wasn't because the masses. And so you have to, whenever you hear news like that, you have to look, read between the lines a little bit and ask some questions going, boy, is this affecting all the people? No. Is this affecting anybody in anybody's church? No. There's five people who are prominent in leadership and that report died of it. And so, it is COVID has made it harder. You know, if you talk to a Haitian on the street now, they would say, this is the hardest time for Haitians to live. And that's a statement when you say that.
Right, because I think we've all known, I mean, the, what was it, 2011, the terrible earthquake that, you know, sort of, and you've been there so many times, and to see, but it just seems like, why is it, I mean, we could spend a lot of time talking, but why is it that Haiti can't sort of move beyond these things, right? I mean, why is it that it seems like, and even now, as they're trying to push through the assassination of a president, even though he probably wasn't a good president from what we can determine, right? I mean, all sorts of issues with that. And at the same time, how does the church continue? Because I just know the stories that you've shared and the pictures that you've shared, and when you were in Mansfield working through Berean, and now that you sort of are championing the whole church presence there, in a very cool kind of way, it's also like, how do you meet the needs, and how do you help people see how to move out of the sense of poverty and the sense of dread or even hopelessness?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, about 8 years ago, we changed direction, and not so much social need, but more of a church planting need, realizing that you can't change that culture. The culture is so corrupt, and the leadership is so corrupt. The president with the president running for office that has the most money wins, because he has the most people protecting his votes at the polling places. And so it becomes a, who has the most backing, who has the most money, who's got the police behind them to protect the polling places. If you do not have people protecting polling places, then they just throw your ballots in the fire. And so therefore it is, you know, in our country, we joke about an election gone wrong. Every election in Haiti is one gone wrong. So people don't have no faith in it, in the election whatsoever. And so it is just the strongest, most powerful people keep getting into office. So this past president that was assassinated was elected by the president before him.
Okay.
And they say he wasn't elected. Well, the people elected him. No, right. The president before him put him in office because right. That president had the most money at the time to protect the ballots. And so he just placed that his buddy in office.
Well, it came through an election process, though, right? Or was
yes.
it simply?
Yeah.
Because
yes.
I was thinking, I've tried to unpack to understand, and just looking at the news, whether it's the New York Times or the London London-based papers, to get some sense, because you just don't get a real good grasp of why. And it talked about how he sort of was the heir apparent by the previous mm-hmm. president, but at the same time, it talked about a free election. But if the election is not really free, and it's actually controlled. And I even think, you know, the parallels to our American system and just all the questions about, you know, the ballot integrity and, you know, voter integrity and all these things. And I actually served on the Ashland County Board of Elections for 8 years. So I sort of have a sense of, but it's also the internet, when we're passing out ballots right and left to people, it's like that there's a problem with that, because it really does compromise the whole process. And I even think, going for America, just for a moment, going into the next couple election cycles, we sort of, you know, skated through in 2020, but I'm really concerned about our next couple election system processes that we thought we had problems before. And so in Haiti, so then, okay, if we leave the political stuff aside for a moment, because that's just ongoing, right? I mean, right. How does the church, so you say 8 years ago, you sort of moved to realizing that it was about church planning, where you could make the most difference. And I know I can remember many pictures of your travels with youth from Berean to really do the hard labor of, you know, painting and putting on a roof and, you know, putting up walls and all those kinds of things. You know, how does the church then flourish in the midst of that, knowing that the church is the people, right?
Right.
The building is just a tool shed. So,
yeah, the politics do not affect most Haitians, especially those outside of Port-au-Prince. Port-au-Prince is affected by the politics a little bit more. But outside of Port-au-Prince, life goes on where they just struggle to meet their needs, struggle to feed their family. They struggle every day to provide the basic needs that they need. And so that struggle goes on. And, you know, we try to share that the hope is through the church, and the hope is through Jesus Christ. But also, with that, we're starting a program where we're beginning to start chicken farms, where people could have enough protein, could have some form of income, can sell eggs, can do something with the feathers, begin doing stuff like that for pastors, again, working through the local church trying to strengthen the church. And so that people come to the church as for the physical needs and also for the spiritual needs.
Sure.
So, you know, the program I'm involved with now is the Timothy Initiative, and we're training pastors who train pastors who train pastors. And so the goal is that there will be a small caring congregation to help minister to each other's needs and to help share the gospel of Jesus Christ in every town and village, and maybe two or three in every town and village. And not big congregations, but small congregations. So there's a community, there is connectedness, and there's a resource that's helped take care of each other's needs.
Sure. So what kind of numbers is that? Is that 20 people?
No, right now we've started in Cap-Haitien up north with 64 pastors. We call them Pauls. And they have picked over 300 Timothys. And those Timothys are sharing the gospel of Jesus Christ. They have made over 600 new disciples that they're looking to begin. And we're going to begin a theological study training with them this fall. We're going to do a two-year study with them. So hopefully many of these would become pastors. And we're just now putting out the model of what it means to start chicken farms. We're starting to get some funding behind that. And so we've done the research. And part of the thing with Haiti is the chickens that they raise are this scrawny, no meat on them chickens. They don't have the fortified feed and the vitamins and things like that. And so we're working on that end so that farmers who are growing chickens can have healthy chickens and have chickens that have a good amount of meat on them so they could sell them, so they could feed each other well and do that. So that hopefully will get going in the next, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 months. We just had an investor over there the end of June looking over the farm and seeing how much he wants to invest in it. And so we're going through some just investors in the States to put some money into it, and not for a huge, income from it, but to make some income from it in the long term, and a microloan with a little bit of interest included in it.
Okay. So the microloans are a basis of it then. What kind of dollars does it take? I mean, to make a...
We're talking about probably $2,000 for a farm. And that's getting it up and running and beginning feed and all that kind of stuff. It's more expensive than we'd like it to be, only because we have to import the feed right now. We're looking in the process. We have some students who have gone to school in Dominican and know how to put together the feed that's fortified feed, but they don't have the means to put that together yet.
Okay. So I know even like last night I was watching the news. I mean, since you're sort of the Caribbean basin, so Cuba, we saw that the average family is only, you know, there's rationing, and so the average family can only have 5 eggs for the month. And I'm thinking, you know, as Americans, you know, at least at our house on Saturday morning breakfast, my bride cooks up a pretty good meal. That's five eggs. Yeah, that's like 5 eggs just for me and my omelet as I get ready to go out and do a bike ride because I need the carbs, right, and the protein. Yeah. Yeah, and so the things that we just take for granted, again, as Americans, the things we see, and yet the beauty of the kingdom. And so even like the churches, I mean, what's the size of a typical church, and, you know, what is it comprised of? And is it, you know, is it a full-time pastor, or is it bivocational? I mean, those kinds of things.
Yeah, I would say every church has a pastor or two. And none of those pastors get an income from the church. So it's a completely different culture mindset than the States, where if you have a church, you know, you have tithes and offerings, and that goes to pay the electric and pays the water bill and pays the pastor. Well, in Haiti, if they take an offering, that money, none of it goes to the pastor. It goes to pay the fuel for the generator, and then it goes to give to those in need in the church. Mm. And so the church becomes like a clearing office where we just give to people in the community that have struggles, that have needs, whether it be an illness, a sickness, food, housing, whatever it is. You know, the pastor is just a clearinghouse for giving out funds. And so it's not uncommon to give out more money on a Sunday morning than you've taken in. And just and it's not because the Haitians don't give, they're very generous in their giving. But on the other side, there are so many needs within the body.
Right.
Because there is no work, because there is failing of crops, because there is sickness. You know, the medical system is one in which, you know, I was just explaining to a team we have coming in November, a medical team, that, you know, they said, well, you have hospitals in Haiti. Why do we bring medical teams? We have medical teams because you have to pay up front
right.
to get medical service. You know, I had a young man whose wife was having a baby and she needed a cesarean. And they said, you either pay cash or she lies on a gurney. And we all know the outcome of that.
Sure.
And so, you know, it cost, I think, $175 American money. But, you know, just, which was a great price for a cesarean section.
I guess.
But, I mean, it's just, it was one of those things that you sit with the doctor, you negotiate a price. But that was why the Haitians, you know, they die of simple sicknesses.
Right.
And illnesses. And so the financial system for pastors is one in which they have to be school teachers. They have to work in the community. They have to farm. They have to do a number of different things. And so by providing some of them with a chicken farm, that gives them something they could do in their home and someplace they could have an income and raise chickens every 48 days, how many long it takes. You know, to raise the chicks.
I mean, it's interesting. Jace Wolford and Olivia, his bride, actually, they're getting ready to have a baby next week. But they made a trip with Brian a couple years ago. And just they shared in our space about just that encounter and, flying in on a small plane. So I guess just trying to think, you know, from our standpoint as Americans, I mean, having just come through the pandemic, trying to understand the upheaval that's taking place, you know, beyond praying. I mean, the idea of the microloans, is that something that is being managed through Converge, or are there other organizations that you're working with?
That is being managed through the Association of Churches that we work with, Jerusalem okay. Baptist Mission Churches, which has a direct account in Haiti. We are trying to set up an NGO. But that is a long process.
Right. What about partnering with organizations like World Vision or Habitat? I mean, you know, those other NGOs that are out there, or even Rotary, for example. I just know Rotary has some emphasis on clean water and, you know, right. And poverty. You know, how to create some, you know, strategic partnerships to really leverage it. Because I know there's got to be various agencies that are there on the ground. It just seems like, how do we get everybody to pull in the same direction?
Right. Yeah, right now we found that the JBM, Jerusalem Baptist Mission Churches, there's 120 some churches, over 40,000 people that they minister to. They keep their books open for us. You know, we just ran $30,000 through them and they put it where we needed to put it. And so they're like a clearinghouse for us, allowing us to get money on the ground to Haiti. And for the needs that they have. And, you know, they just needed a huge generator for the water treatment plant and for some other things. And so now we're beginning our focus towards building the farm and getting a prototype up so that we could train pastors on how to raise chickens, not the Haitian way, but a little bit more of an American way, where you have healthier chickens, where you're not losing more than 10% of your chickens, as opposed to losing 35% of your chickens through sickness. And so we're just trying to work through that a little bit. With each place, we're trying to dig a well too and okay. just help the water problem. You know, and so that's one of the issues that we're beginning and just in its infancy of getting going. But I think in a year, I think that we'll be a lot of steps ahead.
And again, are you doing that directly or are you partnering with somebody else to do the water wells?
We're working directly, and it sounds terrible, but we're working through churches because we feel like we could trust the men of God.
Right.
And, you know, I've been to Haiti enough times. I've been snookered enough times to partner with this person and do this and do that, and you never see him again. And, you know, the Christmas boxes from Samaritans, from Billy Graham, because Chris, they, the pastors, if you talk to the pastors out in the country about them, they will laugh and they'll say, they have never reached us.
Oh.
He says, they're something that is just, they get hijacked before they ever reach anyone. So it is just, I just decided that, you know what, and not that I'm not trusting, but I'm probably not trusting.
No, I mean, you're a good theologian, right? You understand the nature of human nature, right? We're all broken.
Yeah.
And then that's why we need a savior, and we need the work of the church to accomplish it. So if you were standing in our church and you were sharing, you know, anyway, what are the couple things that you'd want to challenge people to understand as the, you know, as sort of a wrap up to our conversation, that you beyond prayer, obviously, you know, what is it that people can do to help leverage what you're doing and many other organizations?
Yeah, I would say the just remember that the hope of the church in any country, or the hope of that country is the church. It's not found in just throwing money at countries. And so, you know, we have, the United States has thrown a lot of money at Haiti, and you can't see any results from that money.
Right.
And so to work through the church, work through the sharing of Jesus Christ, that work through of training pastors to share Christ, and so that the majority of that country would be Christian, then maybe you'll start to see some change. But right now, it's just like that. That's a country that needs Jesus Christ, because, you know, politics isn't going to save the country. It's going to be through sharing Jesus Christ. And also to consider, you know, and look and saying, okay, if people want to make a microloan and begin that process of just helping pastors. And you know, our goal is investing pastors, and it'll be trickled down through to the people. We don't have any rich pastors.
No.
We have pastors who we've bought motorcycles for pastors because they drive between two congregations.
Sure.
They preach one at 8 and one at 10.
Right.
And because they're walking, you know, they're walking 7 miles between services. And so we got them a moto. So just helping the pastors to minister to their congregation. And I believe as more people come to know Christ, I believe it'll slowly change the climate of culture.
Sure, it will. Has to. So unpack the idea of what a microloan works, how it works. I mean, the loan obviously implies that it's going to be paid back. So you make a gift to the microloan management through Jerusalem.
Yep, Jerusalem Baptist Mission.
And then how do they disperse it? And then, you know, is it available? And then, you know, what's the process, I guess?
The goal would be that in 1 year, it would be paid back. And so that the money can either be given back to the individual or can be given to another pastor in Haiti to use. And so it could go either way. You know, the microloans right now that we got, we had some very generous people that were looking for 0% on it. They just wanted their money back intact to reinvest in Haiti. Again, so it's not giving. It's saying, here's a step up.
Right.
And you get started. And so, you know, even we bought a $15,000 generator. Okay, that was not a gift. That was a microloan. So we have three things that are a sewing factory, a water treatment plant, and a boutique that are kicking back $300 a month to us to pay us back. And so that we'll reinvest that money again. And so the money could either go back to the donor in the first place after so long, or it could be reinvested.
Okay. You're headed back, you say, maybe in the fall?
No, I'm going back next week.
Oh, next week even. Okay.
Next week. And if they don't cancel my flights right now, the flights are still listed. And so they're still flying. I'll be flying into Cap Haitian. I'll be meeting with the pastors on the 24th, I think it is, the 64 pastors. And they're supposed to bring their Timothys with them and for a meeting. And then we're going to initiate the 2-year Bible college course. And, you know, and that's just training pastors through the Timothy Initiative.
Sure.
And, it costs about $300 to train a pastor over the course of 2 years.
Okay.
So we're living on a donation that one church made from that was up in Alabama. I think we're teaching the Timothy Initiative and just trying to find the next church. I have two groups coming in, one in October, one in November.
Okay.
And one of building pews. We have one church that is a 10,000 person church.
Wow.
It is one of the largest churches in the Caribbean. It is a it's one of our main leaders, and they sit on the concrete steps 3 hours, and they've been doing that for 8 years.
3 hours?
3 hours on concrete.
Americans get concerned when the clock goes past the top of the hour, right? I mean, if we're at 65 minutes, we're all in trouble.
With no back, just sitting on concrete. And so they stand up a little bit longer and worship for worship, just a stretch, I think, and give their backsides a rest. But the pastor asked me if I would begin a campaign to bring groups over to just try build benches. And so I got the first group coming over in October.
Okay.
It's a group of senior citizens, all retired people. And they're coming over. We're putting them in a hotel. It costs a little more money. Sure. They get the air conditioning and nice
bed. All the comforts, right.
All the comforts. But they build benches all day. And we'll team them up with a Haitian worker who will be their partner for 6 days and just make benches and paint them. And it's on the ground, so no one has to climb any scaffolding. And so that'll be – I go from working with teenagers to working with the senior adults now. And very similar. I think they match up pretty good.
Oh, they do. I mean, they've got heart and passion. And I think, you know, when you say retirement, you know, we'd have a whole conversation about that in terms of – I'm not sure that's really a biblical concept. And the idea is it's a very American thing, right? But, you know, if a person retires at age 60, 65 – you still have, you know, 20, 25 good years ahead of you.
Absolutely.
So it's kind of cool. And they have some margin. I mean, they're like middle school kids, right? They got mom and dad's, or now they've got their own nest egg to sort of work out of. And so the creature comforts, I get it. The older I get, the more I appreciate, you know, air conditioning and a comfy bed. So that makes total sense. But yeah. Well, thank you. I appreciate just being able to connect with you and reconnect, if you will, because I think it's been, I know it's, when did you guys move to Florida?
We started, I think our last time we got together about 2 years ago.
Yeah, okay.
Where it took us 6 months to raise support.
All right.
We started last January, and then COVID hit.
Right.
And everything was done on Zoom. And then we rebooted again in last October.
I hope you were encouraged by the words that Steve shared. And we know, as we've paid attention to Haiti over many years, that the answer there is not political, but it really is about the hope of the gospel that comes when a person encounters Jesus. And so we want to pray for Steve as he travels, and we want to pray for the church work there and the Timothy Initiative. And so let's do that now.